to advertise, email podcast@thisismaji.com.
Release yourself from order and logic and enter a new place. It's not work. It's not home. Here, no maps have been drawn. No books have been written. Nothing is certain. Everything is possible. Welcome to podcast and chill with Maji.
I'm assuming this doesn't end well.
So football isn't just a sport. It's one of the most ruthless boardrooms in the world. It's billionaires who own the companies, agents who move the assets, and the media who control the narrative. And somewhere there in the middle, sits the manager. Today, we're talking to a man who's navigated that system for decades. Harry Redknapp. He's managed some of the biggest clubs in England, from West Ham United to Tottenham Hotspur. And he's done it his way. Old school, straight talking, and relationship over spreadsheets. But this isn't about football tactics. It's about power. It's about loyalty when money enters the room. It's about what happens to your identity when the stadium goes quiet and those crowds turn. So, Mr. Harry Redknapp, what brings you to our beautiful shores? What are you doing in South Africa?
Well, I got to hear about this AIM, which is an app that the kids can use to look at their skills, improve their football skills, and it just seemed a wonderful idea, and I was asked to get involved with it, so I came over, and I've just had the most incredible few days, really, here, watching the kids play football and the attitude of the kids and sportsmanship. And it's just been a real breath of fresh air to me to come here and see how wonderful these young kids are.
When you're on the fields interacting with those kids, seeing them playing football, does it make you miss the game?
Yeah, I miss the game, but I go and watch lots of kids' football at home. And I see a completely different attitude in the kids that I watched here to what I watch at home. The kids at home, you know, probably get everything. There's an edge to it. Every game, you know, they get fouled, they get up, they want to argue, they want to fight with the opponent. They want to shout at the referee because they see the professionals doing it. These kids, they got on with it. They got tackled, they got up, they shook hands. They just played the game. The sportsmanship it was amazing. I just wish I could show the kids back home just what these boys are like yesterday. It was a breath of fresh air to see. It was fantastic.
Now, going back to your illustrious career, seeing what you're able to see almost at grassroots level for kids that, as you say, aren't as privileged as the ones from the UK. Does it give you hope in the sport and think that, you know, there is still a future for it in such a changing world?
Yeah, I mean, I've been, you know, over the years as a manager, I signed many African players. I've had players from all over Africa, especially when I was at Portsmouth. I had a team made up almost entirely of African boys, you know. And they were just fantastic lads. They were just great to work with, great, you know, to be a manager and a coach for them lads. So that's really why I went down that route. You know, they were desperate to do well and had this fantastic attitude about them. So whether we can change the attitude of the kids at home, I'm not so sure, because the kids at home now, unless you drive them here, take them to training, their mums pick them up, drive them in the car, drive them there. You know, they want new boots every week. They've all got the... I think we pamper them so much at home now, the kids. I do think they're spoilt, really. It's sad, really. I think that their hunger, unless it's all laid on for them, they don't want to work for anything and work to be footballers. We've got very few footballers coming through at home now. When you look at the amount of kids that come out of the academies into the first teams in the Premier League, most teams, really, very few teams have got English players or British players now, because the kids are not, they're too busy playing on their computers and sitting at home all day, watching TV and playing with computer games.
And it's a sad thing to watch, because I think, you know, kids being out in the field, playing football, yeah. enjoying themselves, getting a bit of sun, and really, really exercising, you know, yeah. you know, for lack of a better word. Do you think there's a different hunger with African players? Is there a different hunger for kids that are here and realize what the opportunity would mean for them to end up being overseas? And that maybe then drives them much better than, as you say, your you know, English footballers.
Absolutely. Well, as I say, you've only got to look at the English Premier League now. It's full up with African players and, you know, lads that have come and got grab that opportunity to come and make a fantastic life and, you know, earn amazing money and change their lives, really. There's so many of them now coming and doing that. So, yeah, I do think that hunger is here much more than it is at home now with the kids.
Speaking about football management, something that you've done for quite a while, I'm sure you're quite familiar yeah. with that. When you walk into a club on a Monday morning, where does the power really lie? Is it the manager? Is it the CEO? Is it middle management? Or is it actually the coach?
Well, it is with the coach. You've got to come in on a Monday morning. When you walk into a football ground, you might have had a bad day on Saturday and got beat. And then maybe the crowd are calling you, you know, and you may be struggling. You have to come in on Monday and you have to lift yourself, you know, as bad as the weekend may have been. When I got beat on a Saturday, I couldn't go out on Saturday night with my wife, really, I didn't want to meet friends. I couldn't, I'd say, look, don't make any arrangements Saturday. If we get beat, I can't talk to anybody. I just couldn't. It was quite scary when I look back on it, how low I could get. And I couldn't, you know, I didn't want to be around anybody.
Yes.
Sunday would be pretty much the same. I'm not a great day. I hadn't slept at all Saturday night. I'm tossing and turning and, you know, Sunday. Now, Monday morning, I've got to wake up. I've got to go into the football club and I've got to be ready to go. I've got to turn the lights on. I've got to come in, but give everybody a lift, because if I walk in and I'm feeling sorry for myself and it's showing to the players and I'm feeling, well, we're down, we're in trouble, this is not good. This going to, you know, that's not the message I can send to the players. So I have to go in on Monday and be upbeat and say, hey, come on, lads, you know, have a little chat and we have a meeting. All right, listen, it didn't go well Saturday, but, you know, next week we're going to put it right. We're going to work hard this week and let's, you know, we're going to do this and find a way of giving everybody a lift, make sure training's bright, make sure everybody's upbeat. And that is your job to then get them ready for the next game. But if I'm walking around moping around with my head down, then it's going to relay to the players and it's not the message you want to send out.
Then would you say, Coach, do players respect fear or is it relationship? Is it about that bond that you create between
you and the boys? It's relationship. You get more out of people by telling them what they can do than telling them what they can't do. We all and you get more out of people by... When someone, you know, the players do well, I'm a big going up after a game, hey, you were fantastic today. What a performance, you know. I love watching what you did today. It was, yeah. And they love it. We all want that in life, you know. I learned many, many years ago, I played at West Ham, you know, I was there for 10 years as a player. And Bobby Moore was the captain of West Ham. He was also the captain of England when we won the World Cup in 1966, the last time England won a major tournament. And Bobby said to me, we had a coach who was fantastic coach, Ron Greenwood. He was the best football coach in the country. He was a genius, but he was a lovely man. But Bobby said to me one day, he said, you know, Harry, he said, we were looking back on when we played. He said, you know, Ron never came up to me and said, well done after a game. He said, because maybe he thought I didn't need it because I was the captain and captain of England and... He probably thought, he said, but we all need it. He said, you know, we all need a pat on the, hey, great job today. You were brilliant today. He said, we all respond to that. And that was a lesson that, you know, I always felt that way as well. We all need a pat on the back. Whoever does, you do this today and hey, what a great interview. You know, hey, thank you. You know, and hey, cameraman, you put that film together brilliant today, you know. And we all respond to that. It's nice to be told when you do well. And you'll get more out of people by doing that than telling people, oh, you were rubbish. You know, why are you doing this? Why are you... You can't keep telling people they're not good at what they're doing. You know, that happens in football quite a lot. Coaches shouting at kids or whatever. You can't, you know, you need to... you get more out of them by, you know, encouraging them and telling them what they're doing well and pat them on the back and, hey, that was fantastic, that bit of skill you did that game. It's beautiful, you know. They love it. We all feel good about that.
And you almost play also like a father role, right? Because, you know, sometimes you get players that don't come from the same backgrounds, you know. A household that is either led by a single dad or a single mom, or, you know, come from a very, very sort of, poor background. And sometimes you get a wonderful player that also comes from a wealthy family. And you've almost got to, like, balance and manage all of those relationships. Because you know how boys are. They get there, they either look down at each other, they'll always test each other.
Yeah.
Is it important then also to almost play that father role and make sure all of those sort of social elements are also dealt with?
Of course, yeah. Especially with young players, when you've got young kids coming into the football club, I think you need to take an interest in them kids when they come in training in the morning and you're the youth coach and them kids come in, there might be 16 boys that you work with every day. You know, it's building them personal relationships with them kids. They want to be footballers. Their dream is to be a footballer. And they're on the first ladder. They're now full-time apprentices at a football club. Take an interest in them kids. Talk to them every day. Make them feel good about themselves. Find out what's going on in their lives. I remember saying to Stephen Gerrard when Stephen took over, Stephen Gerrard was the most fantastic footballer at Liverpool, captain of Liverpool. And he took over as youth coach at Liverpool for a spell. And I said to him, every day, find 5 minutes to talk to every one of them kids, you know? How are things? You know, they may be in digs, you know, like living with a family because they're way out of digs. Okay, no problems, everything good there, you know? I'm really pleased with you. You've done great. I'm going to do a little bit of extra work with you on your crossing or your whatever they do in a game. With your longer passing, because you're doing well, I'm really pleased with you. You know, we're going to work. And they'll go home, them kids, they'll feel 10 foot tall.
Yes.
They'll ring their parents. Oh, Stevie spoke to me this morning. He's pleased with what I'm doing. And he's going to do some extra work with me. And it's take an interest in them. Just don't bring 16 kids in, take a training session, pass the ball, we're doing this, and then off they all go. There's more to it. Every kid, someone believe in you. When someone believes in you, you can achieve so much. I could tell you a million stories about people I know and who have been players, who had somebody at the club who believed that they could be a footballer and took an interest in them. And that confidence and the belief, you know, that you can give to the kids is so important. And them kids that saw what we've been doing this week, you know, I found it to have a little chat with him. You know, his little boy got a little calf strain. Now I made sure next day that I knew where he was playing in one. I found him. I said, "How's your calf?" You know, and he looked at me like he couldn't believe that I remembered that he did a little calf strain. You know, I said, "Did you take it easy last night?" You know, he said, "Yeah, yeah, I'm okay. I'm good today." Yeah, and that's important. Taking it real interest in them. You know, we're all individuals. We all respond to different ways, but give them a bit of love and take an interest in them. I think that is really important.
Positive reinforcement. But now that brings us to a very important point, Coach, because you've sort of gone through the different changes that the game took. You think about the old school way of coaching young boys, mentoring them and being there for them. But did you see the transition when football stopped being a sport and now become an industry? Because it's almost as if when that transition happened, there was no longer time for things like that because it was about numbers and stats and data and all of that.
Well, there's always, there is stats and that can only, you know, it can all help, sure. But at the end of the day, it's about individuals and confidence and playing football and going out there and doing it, and you as a coach, you have to be. Listen, there's people that play the game that come out of football. They might have been great players, but they don't make coaches or managers because some people haven't got an eye. I don't care. You could have been the best player in the world. You might not have an eye for a good player. There'll be other people who can see a player and they can see a talent and they can work and they can get something out of that player. It's so the eye and what you see is the most important thing, really. You know, as they say, you know, let your eyes be the judge and your money the last thing you part with. Growing up watching football, my life has been around football. My dad was a fantastic non-league footballer. He could have been a professional prisoner of war, came back from the war. So he missed out really on the opportunity. But even then, he was always getting asked to go to professional clubs. But so I grew up around football. And so it's been my life since forever. So, you know, I like to think that, over them years, you've learned to see and understand the game. And that is, and all the stats and whatever you want to give me in the world is, my eyes would still be, you know, the most important thing, what I see and what my intuition, what it tells me.
Well, you had an opportunity while you were here over the past weekend to look at some of the boys, to spend a little bit of time with them and have an interaction with them. What is it that you look out for? What is it that you, when you look at a boy, you think a star might be born or this one?
Anything. It could be the way he takes the ball in, the way he controls the ball, the way he moves, the way he can run. You just get this feeling for a player. You know, I've gone and watched players and I've got there and I've watched the warm-up and I thought, he might be a player. I don't know him. I've gone to watch him. I've been recommended him. And I can watch the warm-up and I think, I don't know. Something about the way he moves or whatever. You get a feeling for a player. You know, you watch so many players over the years, you get this. And I see a kid yesterday, they take the ball, it comes in, they're looking round, they know where they are on the football pitch. They've got this vision of what they can see, and they see everything. When the ball, they're waiting for the ball to come, they can see where they're going to pass the ball before it arrives, and the way they take it and the way they control it and just the way they run and move, you get a feeling. You might do one thing and you think, oh my God, I like him. This kid can play, you know?
When did money start becoming an issue in the game? Because I think that's also, you know, when the billiards came in and the big money came in. Did it change players? Did it change the game?
When I came into the game, I left school at 14. No education whatsoever, unfortunately. Not a thing. My dad worked in the docks. My mum worked in the cake factory. We had no money. We were very, very working class, like all the kids were. I joined West Ham. All the kids, we were working class kids. That's where footballers come from. They come from working. In the main, they come from working class backgrounds.
Yes.
You know, none of us were private school or public school. Anyway, it was all kids out the East End of London who grew up on it. The way out for us was to play football. It was an area that produced footballers, boxers, you know, bank robbers. I mean, that was the area that we lived in. That was the East End of London back in them days, you know? And but for us, it was a way, it was what we loved and a way out to. So, and the money wasn't important. My first wage was £5 a week, £6 a week the second year, £7 a week the third year. Money didn't come into it. You play because you just, it was doing something you loved, you know? Yeah. And there was a maximum, back in them days, there was a maximum wage. It was £20 a week. That was the most you could earn as a footballer, £20 a week. 60,000 people there, but the maximum wage was £20 a week. Then that got abolished, and then they opened it all up, and then we got the first £100 a week footballer, Johnny Haynes. And now the money is crazy. Too much money. Average players earning too much money. Good luck to them. You know, if I was there, and I'd love to be earning it. But if we're truthful, there's too many players earning £100,000, £150,000 a week. I think are pretty average players, really. You know, the money's gone absolutely crazy.
Has it changed loyalty to the clubs?
Kids leaving school. Kids leaving school now, 16. They're getting £20,000 a week. They're coming. They've got 5-year contracts. Where's the incentives? You used to come in, you got a small wage, and the incentives were to become a professional. You were an apprentice. Now they leave school, so they get the apprenticeship for 2 years, which they have to do. Mm-hmm. Then they got a guaranteed pro contract. Back in the day, you had to work to get the pro contract. Your dream was the 2-year apprenticeship or 3-year apprenticeship, hoping you would get a pro at the end of it.
Yes.
That was the dream. Now, because every club is fighting for the best kids, so I'm a Chum at Chelsea. So I come to your family and I say, look, we want to sign him. We give him a 2-year apprenticeship and a 4-year, 5-year guaranteed pro. So now you're guaranteed, you've got 7-year contract before you've even done anything. So now your feet are under the table. You're earning £20,000 a week. Where's the incentives? You're going out, you're buying the big watch. You know, you're 17, you want the big car, you want the Range Rover or whatever. It's the incentives are not there. These kids, they sit back. A lot of them, not all of them, but an awful lot of them sit back, don't want to work hard enough. There's no incentive. They think I've made it. I've got the money. I've got a 7-year contract here, you know. And it's wrong. It's wrong. And then when you try to shift them kids, they're not good enough, and try to get them to a lower division club to play football. The lower division clubs can't afford them, because they can't pay them wages. So they end up stuck hanging around the Chelsea or an Arsenal or a Tottenham or somewhere on crazy money and not playing, not being good enough. The incentive and that was there to become a professional and earn good money, they're giving it far too early now.
Has that ruined the game?
Does it?
Has that ruined the game?
Has hasn't helped. It don't help, for sure. It don't help. The kids are... they're spoiled, basically. As I say, you strive to get that professional contract. That was the drive. Can I become a pro? And then at 17, the manager called you in. You left school at 15 or whatever. And he said, we're going to offer you a 2-year professional contract or 1 year. And he was like, oh, you know, what a dream. You go home and tell you, I've got a contract. They've offered me. Now, they've signed that before they even leave school. They've now got that contract in the bag. They haven't got to work for it. They've got a 5-year contract on £20,000, £25,000 a week. It's crazy money. They're giving these kids, there's no incentives there for the kids.
Coach, you speak about very, very important things. And some of the things that you're mentioning, are things that are social and even outside of the game, about outside of just being a manager and making sure that the guys do well on the field. But it's also about emotion, right? A lot of the time you speak about how you spot talent, your intuition, that your eye is far better than any computer data or spreadsheet. Is there a player in your career that you've kept in a club because of who they were as a person, because of their attitude, you know, even above the way that they play, but you felt that this is just the right guy for the team and to have him in my change room?
Oh, I think when you sign a player, you do that. That is the key. If you've got good lads in that dressing room, you're not in the dressing room. You're a manager. You're the coach. You get changed in a different... That dressing room decides everything. Them players, if you've got the wrong characters in that dressing room, they can destroy you and they can destroy everything. If there's people in there, because they're not playing, there might be one or two who are not in the team. They're not happy. They're the manager, this is wrong, that is wrong. They're bringing the place down. You need good, strong characters in that dressing room, leaders, people that appreciate being at that club, playing for you, playing for the fans. And if you've got a good dressing room, it is vital. If you've got a dressing room with some, you know, that's why when you go into a club quite often, you think, I've got to get rid of, you know, that you know the ones you need to get rid of, 2 or 3. I need to get them out of here and let them, you know. That is all important, that the characters in that dressing room. And, yeah, you have players that you think you keep them around because of what they bring to the dressing room. They bring to the – they're the leaders. They might not be the best players, but there'll be people that are, they appreciate being at that club. They want to play for the team. They're great. You know, they come in every day prepared to work and train hard. And they're great for the young players to look up to. So they're very important for you, them people.
In your career, who have been some of those players that you can identify or remember?
Well, I've had so many over the years. You know, going back to the early days at Bournemouth, you know, I signed players there that made the difference to me as characters. And all the way through, really, you were always looking for them type of people that could change a football club for you. And, you know, that's where your signings come in. You make signings, and if you can bring the right people in, you know, they can make such a difference. But, yeah, but to be honest, the captain leadership type of player, there's not so many around now as there was. Mm-hmm. There used to be the Tony Adamses, the John Terrys, the Bobby Moores, the great captains, the leaders. Players now are very quiet. They come in now, they've all got their headphones on, they're listening to music. The interaction is not there like it used to be. You used to get on the coach and you'd have a six-hour coach trip to play at Newcastle or somewhere. So they'd sit on the coach and talk. They'd sit round a table and they'd all be chatting away and maybe whatever. Now they fly everywhere and it's just a very, very different environment that they work in now to what it was when I first came into the game. But so finding them leaders is not easy. You know, Harry Kane is a great captain. He's a good captain for England. You know, good person, good attitude, trains hard, family man, good league, would set good examples to young players. But, you know, they're not easy to find. They're not easy to find anymore. You look around lots of the clubs and everyone's looking for that leader who will lead not only on the pitch but also off the pitch in the dressing room and someone you can rely on, call. You know, you even as a coach, you have a captain who you can call in and have a chat with him about the team. How do you see the team? You know, what do you, and you'd ask them their opinion because you knew they was on your side. They want to win. They want to do, and they'd say, well, Gaffer, you know, why didn't you play him? You know, he's, and you know, I think the players would, they'd respond if you put him in the team or played them two together up front, or what about playing him at the back with him? And, you know, you'd listen and the captain is very, very important. He's not just somebody who tosses the coin, decides what end you're going to kick first. He has to be a leader. He's your eyes and he's your mouth on the pitch for 90 minutes. You can't be, he can make them. You give him the responsibility. If you see something happening out there, don't be afraid to change it. As you know, and if you've got a good captain, he'll do that. Say, listen, come in here, tuck in more, but don't play so wide. You know, he can make little subtle changes for you, rather than you sitting on the touchline shouting, which often we all shout and scream, and who can actually hear what we're saying? Not many, you know. And so, a leader is very important to have that relationship with somebody, with a captain.
There's been great rivalries, and you know, huge fans of the English Premier League here in South Africa. And, you know, what was it like being of that era? I mean, the era of Sir Alex Ferguson, the big games, Chelsea, United, you know, Man United, Tottenham Hotspurs. And how's that atmosphere? What is that like? And how much pressure does that put on you as a coach when those big games that all eyeballs are watching on those weekends?
Yeah, they're great. You know, you always look forward to the big games. There's certain grounds that you look forward to going to that have got a, you know, going to Anfield was always special. Going to Liverpool, you know, I think when the crowds sing before the game, you'll never walk alone. I still think it's the most moving, you know, in football. It can bring goosebumps, you know. It really is incredible atmosphere. And going there, going to Old Trafford was always special. You know, great team. Alex always went in. And, you know, when the players went out for the warm-up at 10 past two, I'll be going to Alex's office and have a cup of tea and we'd chat about the kids at the football club. He'd tell me about the young players he had coming through. I'd talk to him about, because back in them, you'd run the club. I knew every kid at my football club from 11, 10. I knew every kid, I could tell you. And he was the same. That was how it was. You'd run the club. You knew the tea lady, you knew the groundsman, you knew everybody, you know, you had a relationship. You was in, it's very, very different now. You don't even choose the players now. But in them days, yeah, and the atmosphere at them games is incredible. It's fantastic to walk out there, you know, and the crowd are singing and ready for a big game. It's always special, yeah.
Because you speak about having grown up in a very sort of, you know, you had a very poor upbringing, or just like normal upbringing.
Yeah.
Your status now as manager, you know, you're this hot manager that's now, you know, West Ham United, Portsmouth, you know, Tottenham Hotspur. Did you lose friends because of your status? Did it ever change the way people look at you or interact with you or even approach you?
Yeah, people are very different, but I think I've never changed. That was the most important thing for me. You know, I never changed at all. Yeah, it changed your life when you become a football manager. Mm. I haven't been in a pub for, you know, since I went into football management. You know,
wow.
Never, you can't go into the pub and have a drink with them because, you know, they've all got opinions. You're the manager. You can't mix with the players.
Yeah.
You cannot, you know, I can't go out. I'm not one of the boys anymore. Unless you have to have that, it's that fine dividing line. You have to have that respect. You go out and start drinking with the players and getting, you know, having a few beers too many, things can happen. People, the players can say stuff. You can't never put yourself in that position. You have to change your lifestyle. That is a big change. Once you go into football management, you're not one of the boys anymore. If you want to be one of the boys, you're not going to last very long. You're not going to succeed, that's for sure, because you can't afford to let your guard down too often. So it is a very different, but my best friends are still, I'm lucky even at my age, my best pal is still alive, lucky enough. He still drives a taxi in London, and we're still mates from them days when we first played football as 9-year-olds on the big council estate we lived on. So, yeah, I still enjoy seeing my old pals. They're still always, I think. And I said to them kids the other day at the soccer, you know, keep playing football all your life. These boys now that you make mates with, you know, in the under-15s, they'll be your mates for the rest of your life. You know, them days you'll look back on, they're the best days of your life. So, yeah, your life has to change. You can't just say you have got to, you know, you can't do the things that you did. You can't be out having a drink and letting people, because you know what the press are like or something. You let your guard down for 1 minute when you're in football management and you can be in trouble. There's always somebody who wants to get you saying something that maybe you shouldn't say. So you've got to be very careful.
What happens then in that context, Coach, when the headlines turn on you, when you're sort of put out there as a coach, and even on your personal terms, and the media has turned against you? How do you handle it? How do you deal with that pressure?
Difficult. I didn't buy newspapers. I didn't buy a newspaper. Never look at a newspaper. When you go, I did that not only when, you know, I thought, well, I don't want to read them when I'm doing well, so, and I don't want to read them when I'm doing bad. I just didn't buy a newspaper. I stopped. I wouldn't put the phone-ins on. When I know there's a programme on, used to be on called 606, where they'd come on, I'd be driving back from a game, you'd got B, and then they got fans ringing in and they're taking calls about you should get the sack. So I don't put it on. What you don't know don't hurt you. And that was my motto, really. I just didn't want to, I didn't want to know. I don't want to, and if you don't want to, you know, I didn't want to see the bad bit, so I cut myself off completely from that type of stuff, you know? Because if you hear, it's not nice to hear. I don't care who you are. You don't want to hear people ringing up saying you should get a sack and you, it's not what you want to hear. So I cut myself off completely from listening to that type of stuff.
Did that help in any way? I mean, is public reputation something that you can even control, or is it what you allow in and what you allow out? Is there a way that you can manage it in some way or the other?
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? You know, your life is, and I'm a family man, obviously, and so, but when you go home, you know, as I say, even going out on a Saturday night after a defeat wasn't something that I could, but that's where you need your family around you. My wife is a fantastic, we've been together since we were 17, so. And you need people, you know, she knew my mood. She knew, you know, how to handle a bad day and a bad defeat or whatever, or under pressure, because it's not nice when and especially for a lot of the younger managers, they finish playing, they go into management. It's their first job. They want to be a success and they come under pressure. It's a very difficult time when you want to build a career in management or coaching, and it's, and before you know it, it could almost all be over for you. So it's not easy.
That transition from becoming a footballer, you know, playing the game, to managing the game, was that difficult?
Yeah, it's difficult because you've been one of the boys. You've been in that dressing room. You go out with the lads, you know, and then suddenly you have to cut yourself off from them. You're no longer now suddenly from being Harry, you're now the gaffer.
Yeah.
And it's a different, you know, very different environment that you have to work in. But you can't be one of the boys, unfortunately. As much as you want to go out and have a drink with them, you can't, as I say, it's just something you cannot do. because, you know, you won't last very long if you do that. You've got to keep that barrier. There has to be that respect between you. And that barrier has to be there. You are the boss at the end of the day. You have to make decisions. And when you leave players out on a Saturday, they hate you. Their wives hate you. Their kids, their mum and dads hate you. Everybody, you know, when you're picking them and they're playing, oh, he's great. The manager's fantastic. You know, how many times you see a manager get the sack? The new manager comes in. Oh, it's much better now. You know, the new manager's come in. We're doing this. We're doing that. He's getting us fitter. And then he goes, and then it's, oh, it's better now. The new manager's come in. It's, you know, listen, when you're picking them, they love you. When you're not picking them, they hate you. You know, so you can't really, that's, if you think they all love you, you're dreaming. The moment you leave them out the team, they'll turn as quickly as anything on you. That is football. That is how it works.
Do you think there's a vast difference between who you are privately and who the public thinks you are? Because, I mean, when you're out there managing, as you say, you're the gaffer, you're the boss, yeah. Right? But there's also a private Harry. There's a Harry that's a family man that, you know, kids, wife, everything. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm very much a family man. I'm at my happiest, to be honest, when I'm just with my wife. Yeah, that is my life, really. Loved going out, just the two of us. We go on holiday. There's always just people think what. But people must think we've got no friends. It's always me and Sandra. We're always us two in a restaurant on Saturday night sitting in the corner. I just love being with her.
Wow.
And we've been together since we were 17. We were only just 17 when we met. So we had 4 years where we went out together and then we got married. It's 58 years we've been married this year, you know?
58 years?
Yeah.
Gosh.
Wow. So I know.
You've got to give us the formula.
She was unlucky. My God. But she's my life. Yeah. And I just love being with her. I just can't tell you. I'm not. So we're not. I don't need anybody. I've got the family, my two boys. I've got my grandkids. I go and watch them play football and I follow them now. I love watching them play. So yeah, my family is, you know. We're pretty quiet, really. We're not party people or, you know, I'm not big functions. I hate if I can get out of going somewhere to a function in London, I'll find an excuse not to go. And if we do go, I'm the first one out of there. You know, I'll find a back entrance where I can get out and get in. Thank God I'm on my way home, you know. No, I'm a home bird, really, you know. I ring her this morning. I've rung her 3 times this morning. Already, see how she is.
Lovely.
You're right, yeah. You know, and that's my life. I don't, you know.
That's incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Were there moments, especially as time moved on and moved on quite quickly, were there moments when looking at how soccer is managed, looking at how football is being managed and the way that the game is moving, where you felt that there's no longer space for me here because this is not how I want to do things, when you realise that I'm actually not the most powerful person in the room anymore?
I never had that when I managed. I picked the team, I signed the players. It's very different now. Managers now are given players to work with. They're not. You used to go, when you was a manager, you went to games. Every night of the week I'd be out watching a football match. If there was a game on, I'd be there to watch a game. Starting out in my early days as a young manager at Bournemouth, we were in the old fourth division, third division. I'd be out every night looking for talent, non-league players, semi-professionals, picking up a gem somewhere who I thought could come and play.
Yeah.
And that was my life, in the car, go and watch a game. And even then as a manager at West Ham, we'd go and watch games every night, be watching football matches. Now, the managers now, you never see a manager at a football match. You never see a coach at a football match that they're not involved in. They don't go anymore because they're not picking the players. All the players come from abroad anyway. So when are you going to go and watch them? You're signing players from Argentina or something. How are you going to watch them play? You know, it takes you 2 days to get. The time you get to Argentina, they play on a Sunday. The time you finish Saturday night, they don't watch games anymore. You've got other people bring the players to you. You've got heads of whatever. They've all got fancy titles. And most of them probably never played football. They're academics who study the game and they learn the game on, I don't know, whatever. But on their computers and they go and they give you the players. So now as a manager, you come into me, you I'm being given a player, and I look at him and I think, don't fancy him, not for me, don't like him, not good, not, but I've been given him. And what happens, you see, you have, the manager would have a very small say who comes in. I listened to a program the other day on TV, and there was a chief executive from Southampton who was there. He's not there, but he was saying, explaining how they sign players. He said, we have a committee of six people. The manager is one of them. So I go, oh, really? So, okay. So there's, has to be a majority vote to sign the player. If we, he said, does the manager have the final say? He said, oh, no, he just has 1%, 1/6 of the say. Back in the day, Alex Ferguson, Arsene Wenger, myself, all the, we chose the players. If they were no good, it was out. We made the mistake. We took the blame, and we, Harry, you wasted our money. You bought this player. He's not good enough. You're going to, fair enough. And that's the way it was. If they were good, hey, what a signing you made there. Fantastic. What a good player. And that's how, what you did. You built your own team. You put that team together with the players that you decided you wanted with your eyes. If the club can afford to do it, that's another matter. But you, it was your team. You picked every player. Now they don't pick any of the players. They're given the players. The players come in, they're sent, they're given to them by other people at the football clubs. Who's, so if their judgment is not great, you've got no chance. You can be the best coach in the world. If I'm giving you bad players, you ain't going to win. You ain't going to win. And that is the problem now. You can, you know, you look and think, what, he's got no chance. Look at who's bringing these players in.
Then how do coaches then take the public heat? Because some idiot decides which players to
absolutely
bring in.
Absolutely, but that's
but
what,
yeah, you're the face of all the shit decisions they make.
They don't care. When it comes to firing, you get the sack. You're the coach, the manager, because the team are losing.
Yes.
It ain't the guy who's brought these rubbish players in. He's still there. There's players, that there's people at the moment at football clubs, I know, heads of whatever they're called. They've all, I don't know, they keep changing. They've got, they used to be called a chief scout. That was the old title, the chief scout, the old chief scout who had the eyes, and he'd go and watch your game and he'd recommend a player to you. And once he came back, you'd say to me, Harry, I've seen a boy playing at wherever, you know, Doncaster Rovers, you know, I think you ought to have a look at him. Then he'd give you that. Now you go and look at him as the manager. You'd now find, okay, they're playing next Tuesday night, I'll go. Mm-hmm. And you'd watch him. And that's how it worked. Now you don't watch them, you don't see them. You're given these players and you get on with it.
Technology has also now become a huge, huge, huge part of the game. Data, analytics, you know, AI, all of these different sort of things that they're bringing into the game that have, you know, it's almost as if spreadsheets have removed intuition. Has that impacted the game? Is there space for it, you know, in the game, in the state?
Yeah, for sure. There's room for stats, of course. Yeah, I mean, every little bit of help you can get is gives you that edge has got to be important. But there's still obviously room for your own judgment as a manager or a coach or whatever to, you know, you can never take that away. It can't just be a, you know, a robot. Otherwise, you might as well get a robot sitting there with, you know, going through the stats. They're a good vehicle and a help. But at the end of it all, you've got to be a judge of your own, you know, what you see as well.
So, Coach, you mentioned something quite wonderful, that in this day and age, coaches aren't watching games anymore, right?
Yeah.
And you say also, on the other hand, that there is space for technology.
Yeah.
Is there somewhere where the two can come together, where technology and intuition can meet halfway, even if it's maybe through an app or through this technology, and make your job
easier? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I look back, when I was a player, you came into the dressing room at 2 o'clock and the manager would come in and he'd announce the team, and you never spoke about the opposite. You didn't know who played on the other team. You knew, because obviously they were all players that used, but the manager never went into detail about the other team. He'd say, we're West Ham, or we're playing Tottenham today, and you know, the manager would come in and you're playing, this is the team, he'd read the team out. Then he didn't discuss the other team in depth or anything else. You know, you went out and played. It was you against them, basically. then suddenly it all started to evolve. And then when I came into football management, and then we got stuff where we could then watch the opposition. So on Friday, Thursdays or whatever, we'd watch the opposition. We'd be all week, we'd have stuff where we can watch Pro Zone or whatever. We could watch the opposition that we were playing against, what they did on set plays, what some of their players did. The wide right player would come on his left foot all the time and look to shoot, so don't let him come on his left side. And then suddenly, yeah, big, big help. And then that all came in. And then so then you had meetings with the players on, you'd had the meeting on the Thursday probably where you'd just show the opposition, which show how they played, where they went from set plays, then we'd organise it on Friday. We'd then go on the training pitch and use what we'd seen in how we'd mark from corners. This is, you know, we'd seen it all, how they'd set up from corners the previous weeks. So, yeah, a big, big help for sure. I mean, so, yeah, we certainly, it made a massive difference. And everybody then was suddenly using technology to help to improve your team's performance.
And also maybe looking at what technology can bring. When we speak about certain, AIM, for example, where you're involved about democratizing football, when you looked at those boys that were playing out on that field, knowing they come from Soweto, Westbury, or, you know, some village, that child now has hope to be seen by a Portsmouth or a West Ham or a Man United. How important is that to also maybe increase hope for that child that I'm going to play at 16 and then, you know, I'm going to become a banker. But when technology is involved, they know that my eyes or my talent is now being seen by the global community.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, yeah, it gives them that hope that, you know, they need that because there's not, the scouts are not here. But if they've got that, you know, we haven't got somebody coming into Westbury tomorrow to look at the kids playing, perhaps, you know. But if they can get it out there in the wider world, and someone see that and they'll look at, you know, and look at these kids here, look at this kid. Yeah, that is the dream for every kid, you know, and that it's when, and I used to talk to lots of, you know, the African boys that I had back in the day. I say at Portsmouth, I had a team almost of African players.
Yeah.
And I loved their stories, their backstories, where they'd come from. You know, the training pitch was, you know, I had one or two players complain about the training. Then the African boys, remember Suleiman Tari, and saying to me, Gaffer, I used to play on pitch, it was stones. The pitch I grew up on was just all stones, shell, you know. He said, so this is, for me, this is like fantastic, you know.
Yeah.
And there is so much talent all over the world now. And that is the big difference now, the talent now, because of things, you know, the different vehicles that we have to be able to watch these people play is bringing the talent in from everywhere now. And England, the Premier League is full up with players from all, especially Africa. Different, you know, it's amazing.
Coach, what did you say success looks like? Is it about trophies? Is it about surviving the system? Or is it about getting boys to actually enjoy the beautiful game of football?
Well, I think if you can help, for me, the best part is that when I see my ex-players, they still want to talk to me. They still come up to me and I think genuinely show like some of their affection for me. You know, last week the Tottenham job became available, the sector manager. And suddenly on TVs, different, one after the other, ex-players who played for me saying they should bring Harry Redknapp back in. Harry should give Harry the job to the end of the season. He'll steady the ship, you know. And that meant a lot to me to think that.
Would you ever take it back?
Oh, for sure, I would have took it. Yeah, wow. I'd have gone back for nothing. I'd have done it for no pay. Yeah. I'd have just done it for the love of, you know. But it didn't happen. But it's only to the end of the season. A long term is not my age. Is not, you know. But I would have done it. But it was very, very nice to see the people, the boys, and I love to see them when I. When I see them out and they come up, hello, Gaffer, how are you? I love that. It's great. You know, rather than seeing that fucking horrible, so excuse my language. You know, when they see you, they go, you know, listen, you always have one or two who don't, you know, over the years don't. But in the main, I think, you know, I think I've built good relationships with 99% of the players who work for me. And I love seeing them. I love to see them, you know, and I think they enjoy seeing me and spending a bit of time with me when we can.
What was your happiest moment in your career?
Oh, difficult, really. You know, as a player, playing is better than managing. You know, when you're playing, you're one of the boys. You're in that dressing room, you know. You come in every morning. It's like being in school.
Yeah.
You all come in, you had the laugh, you had the crack, you're playing pranks on each other or, you know, and it's you go away on a tour and you're all having a great time and, you know, it's different. When you're the manager, you're alone. It's the loneliest job. It is lonely. You've got your coaches, but the coaches, when you're the coach, it's not like being a manager.
Yeah.
The coach, you go out every day, you help take a bit of training, the players all like you because you're not picking the team. When you're the manager, you are picking the team. So I'm not picking you today, so you hate me. You know, as I said earlier, that is how it is. So you're not one of the boys. It's a lonely figure. You are a very lonely, you know, your friends are, it's difficult. It's not like being, but when you're a player, you're in that, you're all the lads together. And, you know, I look back on all the great times we used to have and the laughs we used to have and the going on tour to different places and, you know, being a team. But then when you become a manager, it's quite a lonely job. So your best memories will always be playing, you know. And I grew up, I was lucky. I went to West Ham and worked under a fantastic football coach who every day we learned something. And what he did for us, we all went into schools. He got us all into schools in the East End of London, which is a very working class area,
Dock
area, where we all grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And so at 18, 19, Ron Greenwood, the manager, got us all doing our coaching badges. It was all part, he'd get us, we all started doing to get our coaching back. And we all went into schools in the afternoon, coaching kids, back into schools where we came from in them areas. And we used to get £2.50 an afternoon, right? So as soon as we finished training, we'd be straight in, you know, now we're 17, 18, so a lot of us had little cars or whatever. We'd go straight to the school and we'd spend like 3 hours. I used to stay there till 6 o'clock at night with the kids playing football in the gym after and that, you know. But we're there with the kids from working class areas and we were young footballers. They all did it. Bobby Moore, Jeff Hurst, Trevor Brooking. We all went into schools. Frank Lampard Sr. We used to go to a school in Canning Town, the two of us, because that was his old school. Yeah. His old sportsmaster was still the teacher there. Mr. Jones. So we used to go in and we'd coach the kids and we'd play football with the kids till 6 o'clock at night. But that was what he got us all into schools, coaching the kids. And they were great times, you know, for us to give something back to and enjoy being in the area that we grew up in, you know. So, but no, coaching was, but playing was always probably the best time, you know.
Final question, and there's always this raging debate, and I want to hear perhaps from you as being one of the greatest coaches. There's always this Messi and Ronaldo debate, and I think you probably hate it, right?
Yeah.
Who would you say is probably the greatest footballer, not between the two, but one that you've recognized and have seen and said, this is an all-round player, this is a great player, and is even great for the game? Where's your mind set up from that point?
Would be Pelé.
Pele.
Yeah. I played against Pele quite a few times.
Wow.
Oh my God, he had everything, you know. He was a class guy on the field, off the field. He was so strong. He had unbelievable ability. He could spring and jump from not being very big, really, probably 5'10". He would jump like above 6'4" defenders to head the ball. And he scored 1,000 goals in his career, 1,000 goals. I mean, he played in a World Cup final, you know, he scored 2 goals in a World Cup final. Was he just 17? I mean, Pele was an incredible footballer, you know. And then obviously you go on, we had so many great players. Maradona was incredible, you know, Messi, Cruyff, Bobby Moore was the greatest defender, you know. So many great, George Best was a genius, you know. But I think Pele, really, I look at his career, was amazing what he achieved, you know.
Coach, it's amazing what you've achieved. It's been an absolute pleasure having you with us on Be Frank with Mac, and we can only but wish you the best for the future.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's been lovely talking to you.